Hey, you guys. Welcome back to Flickers of Fear. And we're doing another Giallo movie this week. This is actually a 1971 movie. And this kind of turns up on a lot of lists that I've seen around the internet as one of the best, most classic Giallo movies. But on the other hand, I feel like it doesn't really get as much attention or love as some of the other, like, better known, more beloved, movies that are in the subgenre. And I have to say that that is really a goddamn shame, because this is actually a brilliant Giallo film. And even though, like, the first time I saw it was, you know, probably 5 or 10 years ago, it was a long time ago, and I loved it back then, but I mean, I enjoyed it even more the second time around when I rewatched it for this video. I mean, it's not only like a really intriguing mystery that really kind of sucks you in, and the way that it's structured, you know, it's kind of like this really, really tense, like, flashback kind of thing going on, but it's also just visually beautiful. It's very, very skillfully written. There's a lot of kind of like cool, like, symbolism and stuff, and it has an amazing, amazing score by Ennio Morricone. Now, the movie has several different titles, just like a lot of these Italian movies tend to do. So it's also known as Malestrana, which is actually named after a district in Prague, which is where the story takes place. Or I think it was originally supposed to be titled Short Night of the Butterfly. That actually makes more sense in regards to the plot, because there are a whole bunch of symbolic references in the film to a particular kind of flightless butterfly. But the film was eventually released under the title Short Night of Glass Dolls due to another movie with butterfly in the title being released at right around the same time, and they didn't really want the confusion. Now, I'm guessing that the glass dolls of the title maybe is kind of like referring to the fragility or youth of the victims that, like, turn up in the movie. But it's, admittedly, it's a pretty tenuous connection. Then again, Giallo titles don't usually make all that much sense, so I'm not really complaining that much about it. It is actually kind of a cool, like, evocative title, even though it doesn't really have anything to do with the story. Regardless, that's neither here nor there. This was actually the directorial debut of Aldo Lado, who would actually go on to direct another classic Giallo, Who Saw Her Die, from 1972. Which I think I've covered on this series at some point or another. So Short Night of Glass Dolls has an unusual, specifically for a Giallo, but also pretty creative conceit or setup. One that's kind of similar, I guess, to maybe Sunset Boulevard, or there was also an old episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, I think from the first season from 1955, which was called Breakdown. This kind of has the same setup as that. So our main character, who's an American journalist named Gregory Moore, who's actually played by a French actor, Jean Sorel. He was very prolific, and I recognized him immediately from the excellent 1967 movie Belle de Jour with Catherine Deneuve, which is really good if you haven't seen it. So Gregory, our main character, is found apparently dead in a public park at the beginning of the movie. However, a voiceover lets the audience know that he's still very much alive and is presumably suffering from some type of cataleptic situation, but he's very frustratingly unable to tell anyone else, like, what's going on. It's basically locked-in syndrome. He's just, like, laying there, seeming like a dead body, and he can't, like, tell anybody about this terrifying predicament that he's in. So the entire mystery of how he ended up like this is detailed in flashback, as Gregory is essentially laying in the morgue waiting for, you know, to get autopsied, you know what I mean? So he's just kind of like, I have to remember how I got in this situation, because he's kind of like disoriented. So he's trying to, like, remember. It's kind of cool because they'll have, like, he'll be like, I have to remember. And then, like, he'll have, like, these weird flashes of, like, these kind of seemingly random, like, nightmarish kind of images. But then, like, as his memories become more coherent, like, it sort of, like, you know, gets into, like, a regular story. So the film actually flips back and forth between the doctor's kind of fruitless attempts to revive him. It so happens that Gregory has a friend that's a doctor, like, who went to college with him, and that friend he spends longer than he usually would, like, trying to resurrect Gregory because he can't understand, like, why the body temperature of this supposed corpse is, you know, still that of a living person. So it flips back and forth between the doctors trying to wake him back up and Gregory's memories of getting involved in this big conspiratorial clusterfuck that led him to this whole sad state of affairs. It's actually like a really, really good plot device because not only are you kind of sucked into the whole main mystery as it's unfolding, but you're also kind of held in really nail-biting suspense over the course of the movie over whether Gregory is going to be like, whoa, woken up out of his death-like trance or whatever before the autopsy knife, you know, ends his life for real. So it's a really, really good, like, very tension-building narrative device. So as I said, Gregory kind of slowly, through his memories, he slowly starts to reconstruct the story for the benefit of the audience. Now, as I mentioned, he's a journalist, and he's been on assignment covering political unrest in Prague, particularly the Soviet crackdown that occurred in the wake of the Prague Spring in 1968. Now, while there, he's also met and fallen in love with a young, beautiful Czech woman named Mira. Now, Mira is played by Barbara Bach, who was also in another Giallo movie, Black Belly of the Tarantula, which I think I've covered on here. She was also a Bond girl. She was in The Spy Who Loved Me. And, incidentally, is also married to Ringo Starr, so you know what I mean. There's that. She's been in a bunch of stuff. He falls in love with her and is planning to kind of pull some strings, use his connections to smuggle her out of the country and back to London with him, like, at the end of his assignment. Now, as I said, she seems to, like, love him back just as much, and she's very, very hopeful, you know, seemingly, that these plans will work out and be successful because she wants to get the fuck out of here. But then some weird shit happens. Late one night after a party, they go to this party that's like kind of fancy cocktail party, and there's all these like high muckety mucks or whatever in there. She's, you know, he kind of introduces her around, and all these creepy old dudes are kind of like vulturing around. It's like trying to strike up conversations, being creepy, you know, like they do. So they go to that party and it's whatever, and then they go home and then they go to sleep, and then Gregory gets a call in the middle of the night, which turns out to be a story tip, like from one of his informers or whatever. So he goes out there to check it out, and it turns out to be nothing. So he's like, okay, well, that was a fucking waste of time. But then when he gets back to his apartment, Mira is missing. Now, the weirdest thing about her disappearance is that she didn't take anything with her. She didn't take her handbag with all her passport, money, and also she apparently didn't take any of her clothes. Like, even the dress that she wore to the party is still in the apartment, kind of flung over the back of the chair. Like, she just took it off and then supposedly just went parading out into the night stark naked, because he's like, look, I'm sure that all of her clothes are here, all of her shoes are here, all of her shit is here. It's like she wouldn't have just like wandered out. Somebody took her out. Now, as is normal for Giallo movies, the police are dismissive and really not only useless, but actively hostile, like toward Gregory's efforts to track down his missing girlfriend. You get the impression pretty early on that the cops are maybe part of this larger conspiracy. And at every turn, they either kind of like discourage Gregory or try to threaten him, like for pursuing his own investigation, for questioning his own witnesses, stuff like that, either by openly kind of accusing him of killing her or having something to do with her death, or trying to convince him that, hey, you know, girls disappear from here all the time. She probably just took off on her own, and spreading stories around that she had told other people that she was planning to leave. So, of course, Gregory isn't buying that, though. It's like she wouldn't do that. And with the help of two of his journalist colleagues, this kind of chummy guy named Jacques, who's played by Mario Adorf, I guess. He's like a German actor. And the scaldingly jealous and also kind of lovesick Jessica, who's played by the Ingmar Bergman regular, Ingrid Thulin. She's actually in love with Gregory, and she just does not like, she's like, why are you going around looking for that little tramp, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, bitch, you don't even know her. So it's like this whole like conflict situation, which I actually really liked. So while the three of them are like, you know, playing Scooby-Doo or whatever, Gregory starts to uncover a series of similar disappearances of young women in Prague, which kind of seems like it was covered up a little bit. And there, it, you know, like I said, the similarities between like all of these women kind of disappeared from their own apartments, their own houses, and they again like didn't take anything with them. Like they just did, they didn't have their clothes and things or any of their belongings. And so he's like, okay, well, obviously there's some connection there, but he kind of, you know, he's kind of like asking around, but nobody really wants to talk to him because they're just all like, you can tell that they're just kind of like, oh shit, I can't tell you anything because I'll get in trouble. Now, oddly, one thing that he does find out is all of the girls that disappeared are kind of, were somehow involved with chamber music, like either as musicians or as like devotees, like people that would come there and like see the chamber music performances or whatever. So it soon comes to light that the epicenter of the mystery sort of resides in this mysterious chamber music venue known only as Club 99. And as Gregory kind of probes deeper into what its true purpose is, because it's kind of like, it's seemingly on the surface, like somewhere where all these high, like again, like the high muckety mucks come and like watch chamber music performances. But obviously there's probably something else going on, you know, with it. It's kind of like a front. So while he kind of probes deeper into that, he kind of starts encountering like the whole bevy of like shady ass characters who again like either stonewall him completely, threaten to kill him, or you know, alternately end up dead like shortly before or after giving him information. So obviously there's some big conspiracy having to do with this music venue and all of these young girls that went missing, and it was all like a big cover up. Now, in a similar vein to the Sergio Martino classic, All the Colors of the Dark, the sinister forces which are operating behind Club 99 appear to be occult or satanic in nature. So you got that going on. And also, Short Night of Glass Dolls, on top of that, like weaves in a pretty overt political statement about the elderly ruling class, like society's top echelons, being essentially these sort of perverse and almost like vampiric people or creatures who drain the life, like both literally and figuratively, from the unfortunate young people beneath them. Now, it's here that I think it's a shame that they had to change the title, because the original butterfly metaphor was really relevant, because there's like a plot point in the film that centers around a species of butterfly that has these beautiful, gorgeous, like colorful wings, but they're useless. Like they can't fly. They just kind of like crawl around in the bushes and stuff like that because, you know, they can't use them to fly. So basically, he's making an analogy between the butterflies that can't fly, that are beautiful and everything, but the obvious symbolism being that the beautiful young people of the Czech Republic are being held down and exploited by this oppressive regime that maintains a stranglehold over the nation. Like, all these vampiric, like, old people at the top, they're just kind of, like, sucking up all the stuff from the bottom. Now, incidentally, in the resolution of the mystery of this film, I would actually hazard a guess that this movie was a precursor or maybe an inspiration for Stanley Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut. Like, thematically, it's kind of similar, where there's this creepy, like, almost like a cult cabal of elites that are kind of, like, controlling all of this stuff. So it's kind of like a similar thing going on here. Now, this movie, like I said, it looks gorgeous. I mean, the Prague backdrop of the film is just a real highlight. It's kind of like really beautiful and elegant, but also kind of like really dispiriting and oppressive at the same time, which kind of handily ties in with the whole subtext of the movie. There's also like all these other really, like I said, really gorgeous imagery of these kind of like glass, like crystal chandeliers and butterflies and those beautiful like Baroque interiors that I love so much. I also really liked some of the seemingly random, like unsettling little scenes and details in here. Like, for example, the best one, there's like a guy who's like one of the elite guys, and he's experimenting on plants, particularly tomatoes, and trying to determine if they can feel pain. Like, he's got them, like, you know, hooked up to the little meter thing. And I liked this because this little sequence, even though you're watching it, you're like, why the fuck is that in the movie? It's because it's mirroring Gregory's cataleptic situation, like, you know, can plants feel pain? Like, you can see it on the meter thing, but it's like you can't hear them. And it's like that was the same thing that was going on with him. Like, he was in a cataleptic state and he's laying there in the morgue, like screaming internally, like, hey, like, don't kill me, I'm still alive, blah blah blah, but nobody could hear him. And also I want to say too that it also served kind of double duty, because it also kind of ingeniously, like, foreshadowed the ending, which I won't spoil. Now, I will say that I could have done without the scene of the hippie guy singing that cringeworthy and seemingly endless song about butterflies. But, I mean, you can't have everything. It's probably really only like a minute or two, but it seemed like fucking eternal, like that song, because it was so, it just like made me so embarrassed for the person. But, you know, yeah, so I could have done without that. But you can't have everything, you know, and really that's kind of the only sour note in the whole film, which is otherwise a really impeccably realized, very suspenseful mystery that has a really good, like, shocking and kind of cruel resolution that I totally didn't really see coming. So if you're into giallo movies and somehow haven't had a look at this one, I actually recommend it really, really highly. It's one that seems to get overlooked, like, pretty often for whatever reason, but it absolutely needs more love because it's really, really good, and I really enjoyed it much more the second time. Like I said, you know, it's kind of, I don't want to say like it's slowly paced, but it's paced about the same as like some other giallo movies. If you find giallo movies slow in general, you'll probably find this slow as well. But honestly, the mystery of this is just so intriguing. And like I said, the whole race against time where he's like, holy shit, I'm going to get autopsied and I'm still alive in here. That's like really fucked up. So you're kind of hoping that everything will be resolved like before he, you know, gets cut up or whatever. So I feel like the suspense of that is really, really good. But yeah, this is a great, great giallo film. So if you haven't seen it and you're into giallo movies, then definitely check it out because it's one of the best ones. And like I said, I feel like it doesn't get as much attention as some of the other ones. So that'll do it for this Flickr of Fear. Hope you guys enjoyed it, and I will see you guys again on the next one. Bye.